market cycle has now shifted to its late acceleration phase, but that doesn't mean we're about to peak. In fact, according to our next guest, Chris Senek, Chief Investment Strategist at Wolf Research, we're likely still in the middle innings of our current run. Chris, thanks for coming on to Financial Sense NewsHour and speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we jump into your outlook, would you mind telling us a little bit about Wolf Research and what it is that you do there?
Wolf Research is a premier research boutique with a commitment to best-in-class content. We're based in New York and have offices in the U.S., Europe, and Australia, and Wolf analysts cover over 280 stocks in 40 industry and macro subsectors. Managing partner and founder Ed Wolf founded the firm in 2008 after a very successful career at Bear Stearns, where he's the number one transportation analyst for many, many years. And in fact, Wolf was ranked the highest private investment boutique in the recent institutional investor poll, ranking 10 on a weighted average basis ahead of such firms as Goldman Sachs, Credit Suisse, and Jefferies with 9 team slots. My work at Wolf focuses on the macro environment, and my work focused on really two key products. One is accounting and tax policy, which is where I built up a substantial practice at Bear Stearns, ISI, and now at Wolf, combined with a portfolio strategy market outlook product that is based upon a fundamentalist research approach, top-down and bottom-up, using our strength in the numbers to build up proprietary investment themes. We're very process-driven and disciplined in our views, using our proprietary market cycle work, among the many other indicators that we follow. We created Macro Edge, which is an institutional-quality strategy product for sophisticated retail investors and RIAs. And what they receive is a subset of our product that the institutional investors receive that includes actionable ideas on the market sectors and stock. If you're interested in a MacroEdge product trial, please contact our president, Peter Ryan. Peter's reachable at 646-845-0711 or pryan, R-Y-A-N, at wolfresearch.com. That's W-O-L-F-E, research.com. I'm excited to be on today and discuss our view of the markets and where we think we're headed from here, given all the policy turmoil in Washington.
Well, we certainly have a lot on our plate to discuss. And as you mentioned, Wolf Research is very highly ranked when you look at different firms above some of the big names that most people think of. And you guys have, as you mentioned, very process-driven methodology. And I'm looking forward to getting into a bit of that. So if you wouldn't mind, share us a little bit about your general framework for assessing the markets.
Yeah, so we look at the markets from a top-down and a bottom-up perspective. From a top-down perspective, we're always focused on monetary policy and where that is. And we're also focused on fiscal policy. Fiscal policy tends to be more sporadic and less infrequent, but when it happens, it's significant and big. We then combine that with a bottom-up approach that we look at through our earnings lens, where we look at individual companies and what the impact might be on overall markets. And we also use our strong accounting and tax background to build up fundamentally based data into key high-level market themes, such as where are margin trends for the market, where are we in the market cycle based upon our work using the Conference Board Leading Index. And that gives us a framework for evaluating overall market views, sectors, industries, and even thematic themes, currencies, commodities, and the global picture. We do focus in the U.S., but we have views on Europe, China, emerging markets, and other asset classes as well, because you need to have a very holistic approach of the world to have a view on any particular region.
Now, Chris, I want to ask you two related questions. And the first is, you guys turned bullish after the U.S. election. So why was that? Clearly, you weren't just following the trend of the market jumping in response to Trump's election. And then secondly, why do you think that we're now in this late acceleration phase? Would you mind tying those two together for us?
Sure. So in late 2015, we turned bearish into what we believed was Chinese growth slowing, this disastrous combination of competitive currency devaluations that central bankers had created in the race to zero, or perhaps to go below zero with respect to interest rates. Draghi did that in Europe and Japan. We saw the same thing. And we just saw the race to the bottom and affect currency wars. Then in mid-2016, there was, in effect, a competitive truce on currency devaluations. They, in effect, agreed not to keep devaluing their own currencies through more money printing. Europe started to pick up as a result of that and post-Brexit. And then our market cycle work turned up right after the election and suggested to us that we would rebound and growth would pick up not only in the U.S., but in other regions of the world. So really why we flipped that call and so abruptly was our process-driven market cycle work in combination in looking at, you know, the top-down monetary policy changes that had existed. And it was, in effect, a regime change. That has allowed us, in fact, to keep and stay bullish during the course of the year this year, because those forward indicators continue to generally point up and tell us that you want to stay cyclically positioned. So in short, the market cycle work, which is a very disciplined approach, made us turn bullish and stay bullish during the course of this year, when many have been skeptical of the market's rally and believed it would peter out at any point in time.
Let's talk a little bit about the six different phases that you classify the market cycle into. And as I mentioned, you believe that we are now, as of August, I believe, August of this year, that we entered the late acceleration phase. What does that mean, and what are some of the things that you're looking at to track where we are in the market cycle?
Sure. Many investors think it's late cycle because they look at traditional measures since the months between recessions and say that we're the third longest expansion on record, and therefore it must be late cycle and the party's going to end and the bull market's over. We take a different disciplined approach where we look through the lens of the Conference Board Leading Index, which is widely reported and it has a long data time series going back to the 60s, and use that framework and a series of quantitative rules to define six phases of the market cycle. In effect, we believe you can have many cycles within the expansion, and that's very key to getting sector positioning right, style positioning right, and stock positioning right in the market cycle. This year, we've been in the second phase until September when we shifted into the third phase, what we call late acceleration. That is the middle of the cycle. That's that third out of sixth phase. In that phase of the cycle, market returns are still very positive. They average 8.9% annualized, going back to 1960, and it still pays to be cyclically positioned. Our forward indicators are telling us, too, that we're going to remain there for at least the next 6 to 9 months, because we look at 8 forward predictive indicators of where that Conference Board Leading Index is going. And as you might note, if you pull up data, leading indices, whether it's the Conference Board or whether it's the ISM or other widely quoted indices, don't usually fall off a cliff unless there's some type of big exogenous event. So what gives us confidence we're going to stay there and market returns are positive and we'll stay in a bull market is our market cycle work. And 5 out of those 8 indicators are pointing up right now.
Okay, so as you mentioned, we entered that late acceleration phase, and on average, it lasts around 6 months when you look at the data, 5.9 to be exact. So essentially, if we were to stick to that average, that means that we could be moving into the early deceleration phase by February, March of next year, if I understand that correctly. Let's talk about some of the things that could extend or impact the length of the late acceleration phase that you believe we're now in currently. And I believe the main thing that's being looked at by your firm is tax reform. So let's discuss that a little bit.
Certainly one thing when you're in the market cycle that can extend things is either monetary stimulus or fiscal stimulus. And that's what the data suggests in the past, where you've stayed in a cycle longer than history, or where you've even shifted back. There's been some type of stimulus to the economy. One of our first things that we did on the street and where we're ranked number one by Institutional Investor Magazine is in accounting and tax policy. So closely developed, followed developments in Washington. We think they're going to pass tax cuts later this year or early next year based on our work. And we think that will keep us in that third phase or perhaps even shift us back one phase over the course of the year. And so we're closely developing the Washington outlook is a key part of our process and our outlook from now to year end and into next year. Because if they don't pass tax reform or it doesn't look like they're going to pass tax reform, we are likely to move into that fourth out of sixth phase sometime in the first half of next year. And leading indicators at that point will likely peak. And by this time next year, we probably want to become more defensively positioned if history runs its course as it has in the past. So there's going to be another regime change here potentially over the next 6 months that investors really need to look out for, because cyclical stocks may lose steam or they may pick up steam for another breath of fresh air and the run may continue quite significantly. Because no economist, as they look out to 2018, has tax cuts in their GDP forecast. And most economists are expecting low twos GDP for next year. If you get tax cuts, and we think there'd be about $150 billion of deficit spending, that's going to lead to a positive revision in GDP estimates close to 3% for next year. And cyclical stocks, financials, discretionary energy should outperform the broader market into tax reform.
Okay, so if tax reform is successfully passed through both houses of Congress, everything goes expected as you think that it will, then in that case we could see this late acceleration phase extended beyond perhaps even the average, as I understand, of 6 months. So that could take us into well into 2018. If they don't, as you just mentioned, then in that case, you know, an important regime change may be in the offing. Let's talk about some of the investment implications, which you just went into a bit there. In the late acceleration phase, you want to be more heavily positioned or weighted into technology, financials, and energy. And some of the laggards from your research, as you've shown, have been utilities, materials, and staples. What do you see if we do move into that early deceleration phase in terms of where investors want to be positioned or areas that they would want to be staying away from?
Well, the technology sector still does well. We would prefer value tech over growth tech. What moves up in the order is investors, historically utilities have done a little bit better. So in late acceleration where we are now, utilities are the worst performing group historically. But they move up to the second best performing group if we enter early deceleration sometime in the first half of next year. And so you'd want to add some utilities to the portfolio, kind of almost a barbell approach, right? You have tech and then you have utilities. Energy does well too, as well as industrials. You want to start lightening up a little bit on discretionary, right? Because discretionary tends to start to fade in early deceleration. It does well earlier cycle. That makes sense. Discretionary things such as autos, retail, restaurants, and if the economy is in effect decelerating, you don't want to be in areas that need discretionary spending. And of course, staples, telecom, materials tend to not work in the late acceleration phase or that fourth phase, which we may hit in the first half of next year.
Chris, do you mind telling us about your tax reform long short basket?
Yeah, so let's just talk about tax reform for a minute. I think it's very interesting. I think it's really key to the market here and the outlook over the next 6 months, right? And it's going to drive a lot of what's happened. One reason we created this tax basket is to gauge the market and what it's pricing in terms of tax reform. And it has very closely, I think, tracked investors' changing expectations for whether tax reform will pass. In fact, recently after the unified framework was released earlier in September, the stock basket started to outperform. And what it really is at a high level is companies with high tax rates, which would benefit from a corporate tax cut, versus companies with low tax rates, which would benefit less from a corporate tax cut. Those low tax rate companies might be doing transfer pricing. They might be based outside the U.S. There's other one-off variables that structurally have lowered their tax rate. And so on a relative basis, they'd be losers. We constructed it with industry group neutrality. And so you're effectively long one stock with a high tax rate in one industry group, short one with a low tax rate in that industry group. It gives a gauge for what's priced in for tax reform. Now, I think in the overall broader market now, that a third of tax reform positivity, if you will, is priced in. I mean, investors, I think, are priced in at about a 35% chance of tax reform happening. That basket is about flat year to date. It's still up post-election, but year to date, it's been up and down as investors effectively gave up on reflation Trump trade in March. And then as tax reform started to heat up again in September, those stocks rebounded, as did small caps, as did value, because I think they're symptomatic of that same trade. Now, with respect to our base case with tax reform, the unified framework calls for a 20% corporate rate. We don't think they can afford that, so our base case is for a 25% corporate tax rate, which still would be a significant cut from the 35% today. We think they'll move to media expensing of CapEx in the U.S. for at least the first 5 years, probably some limitations on interest deductibility for corporate debt, and they'll likely do some stuff with transfer pricing and maybe put in a minimum tax on foreign earnings. On the individual side, they'll likely have a tax cut too. We can discuss that more later.
Okay, so your base case is that we're going to move down to 25%, did I understand that correctly, for corporate tax rates? And then you are expecting this to be a net positive with some of this already being priced in by investors, but you still expect that there's still upside for the market once this eventually goes through. And so that's a key component there.
That's a key component of our bullish call is tax reform, right? Because that's going to extend the cycle. That's going to lead to a pickup in spending on the consumer side because consumers, after all, are going to have more money in their pocket. And businesses will likely have more confidence and maybe invest in capital expenditures and people and perhaps rising wages. And I think the most bullish aspect of this plan as relates to the economy over the long term and perhaps productivity growth is tax reform with respect to pass-throughs. So small businesses are taxed at, you know, the individual's highest marginal rate, which right now is 39.6%. They're trying to lower or create a pass-through tax rate that would tax LLCs, S-Corps, LLPs at a 25 to 30% tax rate. So small businesses would receive a substantial tax cut, and they're the ones that create jobs in the economy, do hiring, have new business formation, and take risk. And that's the structural part of the tax reform bill out there that I think is the most bullish for the economy over the very long term. Individual tax cuts, people will get some extra money in their pocket, they'll spend some, but that peters out. The pass-through reform is, I think, a big deal.
What about monetary policy? How does that fit into your view of where we are? Do you think that the Fed is, you know, getting near the point where they're going to be choking off the economy or the bull market, or do you think that we're nowhere near that?
We certainly don't think monetary policy is tight right now. One of the biggest pushbacks that we received in meetings that we've had recently is the Fed tightening and slowly reducing the size of the balance sheet will derail this bull market. We don't agree with that. We think that monetary accommodation is at worst neutral right now and certainly won't be a driver of PE multiple expansion going forward, but won't sink the economy into a recession. In fact, the ECB and the Bank of Japan are still expanding their balance sheets and printing money. Certainly, we're waiting to see who the next Fed chair is going to be and assess if that's a dove or a hawk and how they might change the outlook for monetary policy. But we're not terribly worried about it now. In fact, I think the Fed, if the markets enable them, will keep raising interest rates. And we've taken a different contrarian view on slowly and gradually rising interest rates in the U.S. is that we actually think it's a positive thing because quantitative easing, except for QE1, I think hurt savers and benefited borrowers, in effect, financial repression. And if you raise rates slowly and gradually in a controlled environment, those savers might actually earn money on their income, fixed income investments, and money market accounts, and some of that money gets spent. Because we saw a huge disconnect in the savings rate and consumer confidence when the Fed had been at sort of the bottom point of their interest rate cycle, meaning that confidence was high, but savings rates were also high, which is an atypical relationship over a long period of time. And confidence high, usually people spend more money. But because rates were so low, people didn't spend money because they need to save more because they weren't getting the income from that. So as long as it's slow and controlled, we think slowly rising rates by the Fed is actually going to help the economy, not hurt it. Banks can make money again. They'll want to lend, and consumers will want to spend some of that money they're now making in their money market account, among other fixed income investments.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. So what you're saying aligns a bit with our guest from BlackRock that we had on, also believing that general tightening or gradual tightening by the Fed would provide a tailwind. And it sounds like that's also what you're looking at as well. What are some of the other tailwinds that you see still driving this bull market?
Yeah, sure. One is rising global trade. So since central bankers, in effect, called a truce with respect to competitive currency devaluations, global trade volumes have rebounded, and global manufacturing and PMIs have rebounded too. And the most underreported story, we think, of 2017 is the pickup in global growth. No matter where you look and where you slice it, global growth has gotten better in Europe, even in Asia, in South America, and global trade has rebounded accordingly as central bankers have backed off, taking rates to zero or below. Second one is into an improving outlook is higher credit growth and higher bank profitability. There's much been made about bank loan growth slowing down and how that might be a negative to the economy. We think as growth picks up in the U.S., as you get tax reform, as the yield curve steepens, banks start making more money, small businesses and others want to borrow, and bank profitability improves, and that's a tailwind to the economy. And then last but not least, higher consumer confidence and spending. Consumer confidence is up across the board for all income levels. If you look at the data from October of last year to current, and if in fact, you know, there is a tax cut, which we expect, it will benefit, I think, many of those income brackets. And that should propel the economy higher since the U.S. economy is about 70% consumer spending.
Chris, what do you worry about most? That is, what keeps you up at night that could derail your current bullish outlook?
There's really two things. First is, you know, over the next 3 to 6 months, I worry about a taper tantrum emanating from Europe In a way, I think Draghi's backed himself into a corner, and there's chatter that they're going to need to, or want to, because growth has picked up and inflation is picking up a little bit, reduce the asset purchases that they do each month. And if Draghi indeed announces that later this year, early next year, I wonder when he lets that genie out of the bottle, so to speak, if interest rates in Europe, particularly looking at a German Bund, don't adjust up somewhat violently like we saw in the U.S., as investors start to reprice tapering, in effect. And then, since we know U.S. yields are being tethered and low by global yields being low, that leads to upward pressure on U.S. interest rates. And so that, I think, could be a scare. That's not something to derail the market, but I worry about a spike in interest rates emanating from Europe and some missteps in policy there. Second is, of course, China. China, we think, is in trying to manage a massive unwind of a credit bubble. Any point in time, if they step on the wrong pedal too hard, it could lead to another concern about a hard landing there. And they've been using credit this year, we think, to keep the economy chugging along and meeting the growth expectations in the face of their elections and leadership changes throughout the party of Congress there. So we worry they could suffer a hangover in effect next year from trying to keep growth stable this year, given that leadership transition, which happens every 5 years. Those are the two big items I worry about at night.
Chris, what are your thoughts in terms of how tax reform is going to impact individuals? We discussed the impact on corporations and particularly the focus on small businesses and how important that is. But what about on the individual side? What are your thoughts in that area?
Sure. So, you know, there's a lot of chatter about eliminating state and local tax deductions, and that impacts the coastal states and might raise tax rates there. 50% of taxpayers don't pay taxes, right? So 50% of returns, people don't pay taxes. And that's usually incomes below $38,000. And so tax cuts in and of themselves on a dollar basis will accrue to higher earners. That's just, frankly, how the math works. Now, what the administration and Congress will work on is expanding and making tax breaks available to all individuals that they can. And what they'll do with that is they'll expand the so-called earned income credit, where people will receive below certain income levels, in effect, a bigger refund than they already receive under that earned income credit. But certainly, I don't think it's fair to say that high earners tax cut, they want to make a middle class tax cut. It's very hard to do. It has been over a long period of time under either types of administration, whether it's Democrats or Republicans. And because of the skew of who pays the taxes, when you add up all the dollars, they will accrue to the top 20%. That's pretty clear. The other element of it is it shouldn't positively impact consumer spending. So if the average consumer receives an extra $1,500 or $2,000 because of these tax cuts, and who knows what those numbers will be, there's a propensity to spend some of that. And history suggests that they will. And that's bullish for consumer spending, the economy, and the consumer discretionary sector. So individual stuff will be debated more heavily than I think even the corporate. But in the end, the tax cuts will probably end up benefiting on a dollar basis higher earners.
Chris, I want to thank you again for coming on to FS Insider and speaking with us. It was a pleasure going through your outlook and understanding both the methodology and a framework that you use for assessing the markets and why you're still bullish, most importantly, based on a number of different tailwinds and factors you're looking at. With that said, would you mind telling our audience once more on the best way that they can trial your research? We follow it here at our company, and I want to admit that your research is fantastic. There is a lot of great insights and guidance on a number of factors that we are all looking at in terms of how it relates to investment strategy. So that being said, would you mind telling our listeners one more time the best way to get their hands on a free trial?
Sure. So if you're interested in a macro edge trial by Wolf Research, please contact Peter Ryan, our president. He can be reached at 646-845-0711 or by email PRYAN@WOLFERESEARCH. So pryan@wolfresearch.com, and be happy to set you up with a trial of our institutional quality strategy market outlook product for sophisticated RIAs and retail investors. We hope you'll give us a try.
We've been speaking with Chris Senyek, Chief Investment Strategist at Wolf Research. Chris, it was a pleasure. We look forward to speaking to you in the future.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So as Chris mentioned in this interview, they had turned bearish on the markets in 2015. There was a number of different factors they were looking at, particularly a deceleration that we were seeing in the Conference Board Leading Economic Index and a number of other forward leading indicators, which they track. But they turned bullish after the U.S. election. And a big part of that was the fact that we saw an upturn in the U.S. LEI. and they have remained bullish since, sticking to their methodology of looking at the six various phases of the business cycle or the market cycle, as they classify it, according to the rate of change in the USLEI in the Conference Board's leading index relative to the S&P. And so, again, right now, they believe that we're in the late acceleration phase. That doesn't mean that we're looking at a market peak or a deceleration in the business cycle at this point, but it just means that returns are expected to be slightly lower than they were in the prior two phases. And then one of the key things they're looking at now is how long is this late acceleration phase going to last? And so a key component of that question is, again, tax reform. If tax reform passes swiftly and their base case of moving from a 35% corporate tax rate down to a 25%, if that does end up getting implemented, then that is going to be especially helpful for not only corporations, but small businesses in particular, which are still the growth engine for the U.S. economy. On the individual side, they do believe that that is going to be a net positive when it comes to spending. But again, most of their focus is on the corporate side with respect to small business. So that's the more important part when we think about its relationship to extending the market cycle, extending this expansion further. Now, on that note, as he noted, the late acceleration phase typically lasts around 6 months. So since they believe we entered that phase around August, September of this year, that would put us into February, March of next year. So tax reform, they believe, could potentially extend that further, which would take us clearly further into 2018, in which case the three biggest winners sector-wise are technology, financials, and energy, laggards being utilities, materials, and staples. Now, one thing that they are on watch for is another regime change in the market cycle from that late acceleration to early deceleration phase. And he said that could be taking place in 6 to 9 months, contingent on the factors that we discussed, of course. If that happens and we move into early deceleration, according to their data, that means that annual returns are a little bit less than where we are currently at around 7%. And the sectors that do best in that phase are energy and industrials. As many of you know, a lot of different experts that we've been having on our show, Dan Steffens at Energy Perspectives Group, also Marshall Adkins, the director of energy research at Raymond James, have both been quite bullish on the energy sector. After the early deceleration phase is late acceleration, average returns since 1960, according to their research, put us at 6.1%, the duration of that phase typically lasting around 8 months before moving into the retrenchment phase. So that's when you see an actual recession. That's when you see a bear market take place. And then in that case, you're looking at an annual return of negative 14.5%. So that's looking at the data going back to 1960. So those are the six various phases and a bit of the market implications that they have sector-wise. And we look forward to having Chris on our program again to give us periodic updates on the data, some of the things that we discussed today, tax reform, where we are with the Conference Board LEI and the various phases and how that relates to, of course, your investments. If you'd like to take a look at any of their research more in depth, I would highly recommend you doing so. You can email Peter, as he mentioned. You can go ahead and contact them and get a free trial. In case you are driving and you don't have a chance to write down what Chris said, we will have that information where this interview is located on Financial Sense. And lastly, you can check out their website by going to www.wolfresearch.com.
Coming up next on the program, the big picture. Jim Poplava looks at the various merging trends of the investment environment in which we find ourselves and points out how they are different, so they require different strategies. All of that coming up as the Financial Sense News Hour continues at financialsense.com.